This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora and welcome to The Rainbow Umbrella, the podcast where we talk about anything and everything under the rainbow.
Welcome back to The Rainbow Umbrella, Colin. It is wonderful to have you here for this very special science quarterdo.
Kia ora, Mel. It's good to be back.
Yes. So, yeah, this time we're doing something a little bit different. You are all the way in windy Wellington and I am down in freezing cold Dunedin. But we are going to have a kōrero about science and science communication because that is one of the many wonderful things that you do. So I wanted to pick your brain about that. So, yeah, first of all, for the listeners that don't know you, because I know there will be some that do, can you talk to us about, you know, your interest in science communication, a little bit about your science communication journey, and also the exciting SciComm thing that has just started in your world?
Okay, kia ora. kia ora koutou. Ko Colin Tokuingoa. Kia ora, I'm Colin. And yeah, I know Mel from university back in Dunedin. And shortly after that, I moved to the UK and ended up working in a science centre over there because of my nephew taking me along to his favourite place to be. And it quickly became my favourite place to be. And what was the question?
Sorry, I did throw a lot at you at the start. Apologies. Yeah, let's just, yeah, continue that story. Like, what drew you into science communication?
Okay. It was a bit of an accident. I did actually study science communication as a postgrad, but my intention at that point had been to do write about history, in fact, but to do it in an interesting way. And then when I went to the UK and I went with my nephew to his favorite place and they needed staff, and I ended up started out as part-time and then very full-time job, quickly discovered that what I actually really enjoyed most about science communication was that direct engagement with people. And I don't know if I really understood that at that point. I wouldn't be able to say that really, just that I enjoyed it. And COVID came along, as we all know, and I ended up back in Dunedin and working at Tūhuro Otago Museum, and where as a science communicator again, and broke into the world of doing the planetarium work there as well. I had done a little bit in the UK and did that a lot more in Dunedin, and ended up taking over as the very quickly became the planetarium coordinator down there. And once again, delighted in sharing that science and increasingly at that stage, Motoronga, with people, the more and more people, the better. And very quickly after that, I whisked up to Ponaki to Wellington, where I worked at for Fiako Ponaki Experience Wellington at Space Place, the Te Ara Whanui Kitarangi, up at the top of the cable car. I think you've been up there a few times with me.
Some shows.
And again, there I was the programs manager for about 3.5 years, and that was a fabulous opportunity to develop more live planetarium shows, weaving increasingly more Motoronga into what we did, and also live science hands-on experiences with kids and workshops, doing science workshops through the school holidays and special matariki events and that sort of stuff. So all variety of engagement, bring science to different people in different ways. That's what science communication to me is all about. It's I'm not a science teacher. I have literally no science qualifications, officially, technically speaking. So my job is not to teach you science as such. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you'll learn some science along the way. But I realized that what I'm good at and what I enjoy doing is trying to help others experience the miharo, the wonder and the joy that I get and nerd out on each day. That's sort of what has pushed me along the way. And again, I wouldn't say that I know that all the time.
Yeah.
I've understood that more recently, that's sort of the purpose behind it. Yeah, I think that's, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's
That's
kind of how I got to here, yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
basically.
and that's like a beautiful little nutshell of your journey because as you said about, me visiting you in Ponaki and coming to some of the shows, I also did that down here in Otipoti and all I love Colin Bias aside, like watching you do the shows, you could tell that that was exactly what you wanted to do. And even probably both of us, back in that first class, in that history class at university, neither of us would have said to the other, oh, this is where we're going to end up. But it's been really cool. Yeah, right. For me
Yeah.
personally to be able to see you not only deliver the shows and do something that brings you so much joy, but, walk the path that you have to get to the point that you are now, which is, I guess, kind of part of the purpose and the kaupapa of this episode is kind of like talking about that because it is very exciting and it's also exciting for the world of science. So, do you want to share this amazing new adventure you're about to start?
But you're very good cheerleader, aren't you? Promoting, thank you.
Is what I do.
I re very recently began my own science communication outfit up in Kapiti, where I now live. So I moved from down in beautiful Island Bay in Wellington up to Paikākārākei back in February, and I have to say it's probably one of the, if not the best decisions of my life, and I love the place, and we'll have to do another episode on that because I will go on and on about it. One of the things that it gives me here, in fact, which is connected to what I'm doing, is the direct connection to the dark skies that are up here, the beautiful Te Tāiao out here, the nature. The environment is just wonderful. Wellington is beautiful place and it's great, but doesn't have a doesn't hold my candle to this place. But so I started a small science communication business, I suppose. I don't like the word business because part of what I want to do is provide those science experiences for people who don't usually get it. In Wellington, working where I did, and in Ponaki, sorry, in Otipoti in the Te Uru Otago Museum as well, to some extent. We are delivering amazing content in lots of different media, whether it's face to face or it's planetarium stuff or stargazing or kids events at Capitoli, all of those wonderful things. But a lot of it costs a lot of money to go to and to attend. So one of the reasons I started this up was a limitation in those sorts of organizations where it's difficult to do things for free and difficult for me too, but I've got to pay for it. But so to that end, I do my bread and butter is sort of direct science communication. So I do science talks and science experience, live science experiences. So that's whether it's kids' birthday parties, right up to functions and events or museum gigs, doing shows associated with exhibitions they might have, that sort of thing, corporate events, anything you'd like. And that is in aid of hopefully providing easier access to other people. And I don't, I'm just talking and talking now. Cut that bit out, obviously, please, but
That's totally why we're here, though. We're here to kōrero about it, and I think it is so exciting. And as you said before, I am a cheerleader. That is what I do for people and for the people I love in particular, because I'm lucky enough to have that opportunity. And it is really exciting to see you doing this because it's not a brand new idea. We've had kōrero about this for a while, so the fact that you're actually doing it is it's so freaking cool. And I tell you, if I lived in Wellington, I'd be like, Colin, showtime, let's go. We'd be doing it all the time.
I take you out all the time as well.
Yeah. Well, that's it. It's like the conversations we have, whether it was, when you were down here, when you've been up in Wellington, we have conversations about science stuff, particularly about the stars and the sky and all of that, because I know that that is something that's so important to you and you have learned so much about that, throughout your career in the SciComm space. And so it's really cool to see the fact that it's like, look, I'm going to share this stuff with whoever wants to learn about it, which is really freaking cool because it can't just be selfishly tell me all the time, tell everyone all the time. I can't monopolize the Colin wisdom because that would be that selfish.
I'll
So
tell anybody listen to me.
you exactly just tell anyone who will listen. Yeah, so in terms of how you got to this point, because I know obviously, you enjoy the SciComm stuff, as we've said. We've talked about how much you love the sky and, space science, if that's what you, I guess that's what you call it, and all of that sort of thing. We have conversations about that all the time. So was that like learning about that in the jobs that you've had in the SciComm space, was that kind of a bit of a motivator to do this as well?
Recently, I started this business, so I was developing the website, and I had to do the About Me page, and I hate that stuff. I can talk, endlessly about nerdy facts, about random facts about anything, usually. When it comes to me, despite what appearances in this moment, I don't like talking about me. And so anyway, when I was going through trying to figure out how I was going to actually talk about myself and explain why I had started it, the reason was that basically I fell in love with, I think Live Science did it actually. I fell in love with science when I was like 37 years old. And the only thing that I regret is that I didn't do it 30 years earlier. I credit my father, in fact, for helping me understand that the one of the ways you under that, that it's really useful to help yourself learn something is to explain it to somebody else. As it's not an it's not a new brainwave or anything, but he's the one that helped me understand that. And then I quickly learned in the SciComm world, especially because you're privileged to be able to do fun stuff, but being able to share that fun stuff was twice or 10 times more enjoyable than it was to just do it yourself or learning it. So the motivator behind this part of this is to kind of try to spark that enjoyment, that excitement a lot earlier. Like I say, I'm not a science teacher. I'm not there to teach you the science. I'll teach it to you if you really want to know. I'll sit down, we'll go through it. But I'm there to make it exciting and make you go, "Ooh, why does that happen?" And then go and figure it out and go, I want to know what the next bit is. Because that's been my own journey anyway. When I recently found this world, and I have, like I said, no formal science qualifications. I remember one science class from school, and it was the day that he exploded a hydrogen balloon. I don't remember the rest of the lesson, but I remember that and what he taught. So, that's a nice symbol right there. But my point is that, and then I went through university doing history. I'm a historian. My undergrad was history. So when it comes to the science, I actually have to, before I can tell anybody, I have to actually go and learn it myself. And so part of my process has been figuring out the ways that I'm going to learn them, and then therefore finding fun ways to share that process with other people and learn more in doing so myself. One of my good mates, I hold up as one of the best science communicators I know, to sort of badly paraphrase her, surrounding, like, I'm not a scientist, never claimed to be. I'm not an expert in anything. What I'm good at and what my superpower is surrounding myself with people who know a lot more than I do. And just trying to take what they know and parse it a little bit and bring it down to my level, and then kind of help share that out a little bit, so that's why I'm trying to do what I'm doing.
But there's, that process, there's a skill in that as well. And I think, I don't think I'd be incorrect in saying that the history background that you have will help with that as well, because it's you're taking on information, you're digesting it yourself, and then making it accessible for those that you are having the korero with, it's one thing for you to understand it, but then to transform it in a way that's easily understood and accessible for anyone that's listening is, to use your
Yeah.
words, a superpower in itself,
Yeah. Well, in fact, the person that I'm talking about, she just published an article. I'll send you the link to it, in fact, because it's very interesting.
Oh, cool.
And it's written, it's basically like why you should have science communicators. And
Okay.
But the point is that scientists are, and I know a lot of actual scientists as well, and they're brilliant people and they know a lot of stuff. And but there is often a little bit of a disconnect between what they can understand and what not what they know. And it's just what it's the background information that is lacking in someone else to be able to understand this one little piece that this person happens to focus on. And
Yeah.
so we have to take that and distill it down into, analogize it perhaps, or use a different way to explain it, to be able to say to somebody who doesn't have all of that background information, this is actually the bit that is important. This is why this is important. Because it's not just about what it is or how it works. Because yeah, cool, we can understand that stuff. Fantastic. So what? Why does it matter? That's also part of what we need to explain. And so the science communicators in all different stripes are important to bridge that gap. And by no means am I saying that scientists don't do that as well, but there is a skill that we have because they're burdened with, they've got to do the science as well. We get to take the science and go and have the fun, share the fun stuff with other people.
Yeah. Well, it's literally in the job title, right? Science communicator. You know, it's like you've said, it's taking the information that other people have figured out and have maybe distilled to you, and then you're making it, understandable for the people that don't have the background that have shared the information in the first place.
I was just going to say it's also analogous to the history. You're right, was helpful because in the sense that when I was doing history, the reason I studied history, and I don't know if it is it's the same for everybody, but in order to understand that now, you have to know the steps that got you here, right? To work out if you want to know how you're standing here, you have to understand where you were there, right? And for me, the science is the same. So currently, I'm writing one of my talks. And the sort of working title in my head is how big has the universe grown in the last 100 years? Obviously, that's not what I mean. You can understand, you can guess what I mean by that. It's like, how is our understanding of size and scale of things different in just the last 100 years? But which is in and of itself an enormous amount, and I have to pick through what's actually the most important because it's all important, but. In order to even know what we're doing 100 years ago, you need to know why do, so it's like you gotta, I'm just cut that whole,
No, it's brilliant because you've
I lost
almost.
that thread.
No, you haven't, because it's almost like you've picked up on the thread that was in my brain. It's almost like we know each other, Colin, and the way that we think, that each other thinks. Because I was just sitting here thinking, there's skills that history's taught you, there's skills that being a science communicator has taught you that are vital in the space that you spend your time, because you spend your time talking about really big things, literally space, really big things, but also big concepts. And like, I have vivid memories of going to a planetarium show, and I think we had a massive big conversation about it afterwards, but it was the show where you zoomed in on what looked like a very small piece of the sky, the universe. Like, there was a section of what looked like stars, and then you zoomed in even more and you said, every single one of those is a galaxy. That's not a star, that's a galaxy. And I just remember sitting back in my seat and being like, oh, good Lord. Like, it blew my mind. And so I guess what I wanted to highlight with that story, and I guess further ask a question, is one, you're talking about massive things and doing it in a way that is easy for people to understand, even if it blows their little minds like it did with mine. But two, you're dealing with all of these big things. How do you not have an existential spiral like I did? Because you spend so much more time there than I do. You probably have a better understanding of it than I do, but we're so small and it's so big, Colin.
Yeah, I do remember that show, in fact. And I had a colleague back in Te Huru Ōtaka Museum, Kelly, who was a big, great fan of coming to the planetarium, except she hated the end of the show because I would take. So, what you're talking about is actually the Hubble Deep Field image, where they, if you take a grain of sand, or maybe let's say a grain of rice, just in case there's people online listening to this who are going to correct me. you take a grain of rice and hold it at arm's length, right? And squint and look at that little grain of rice. That is the patch of sky that they imaged. And then they thought it was basically empty when they did. And so when they imaged it over a course of 10 days and then had a look at it, and then they found roughly, I think it's 3,500 galaxies in this tiny little patch of the sky.
Even just you telling that story is exploding
And
my
that,
brain.
and funnily enough, you would have seen that with me. That would have been before the JWST was launched. And I mean, Hubble also did more stuff since then. That was back in the 90s that that photo was taken. So, and then since JWST, we've had even more of that. But anyway, Kelly would come to that show, and if at the end of the show, I'd actually fly out, or in the planetarium, sort of drift. You'd go out to fly out above the Milky Way, and then just keep going and drifting out till you reach the cosmic microwave background radiation sort of edge of observable universe scale of things. And she told me that that gave her existential dread, that just enormity, the incomprehensible enormity of it all. And I remember thinking about it seriously at that point, and why didn't it worry me? And actually, what I answered in my head was that I actually, instead of it feeling the space feeling big and empty to me, it's full. It's full of stuff, but it's also, I feel more connected to stuff because I understand the cycle of life of the stars and how we are part of that, literally, that we're, our bodies and all our elements come from stardust, literally, eventually. And it's all part of the big cycle of things. So, yeah, you feel small and insignificant, but therefore, I don't know, more connect. I feel more connected to everything else in that way anyway. That's what it does to me. So I don't feel that emptiness because I go out stargazing every night that I can. I go out every night, regardless of the weather, but obviously it's not always conducive to that. But and I sit and I observe and I notice and I imagine. And that's what fills in all the gaps. There's a guy, I think it was Roger Kurt, you're gonna have to leave a blank and I'll come back and I'll voice over the name. Because I believe he was a Kiwi astronomer, and I believe he's partly responsible co for confirming the existence of black holes after they were posited. And anyway, he was being interviewed and being asked, what does he think? And this was back in the he was working in the early days of the 20th century, and the interview would have been in the 50s or the 60s. And he was being asked, what do you think is the most important thing for a future astronomer, astronomers to have? And he said, imagination. Because if you can't imagine what it is you're looking at, you're looking at a tiny little dot trillions of miles away. If you can't imagine it, it's hopeless. So you've got to be able to fill in all those gaps with the real stuff, the science, not just the fantasy. I fill it and I find it worlds of, the more I learn about it, the more full it is. It's not empty. There's nothing, yeah, there's so much stuff out there. It's
And I guess in some ways, because there is so much, it's really freaking cool that we're here. Not to get all philosophical, but like, how cool is
even
it,
better.
and that we're having this conversation now, that there are so many wonderful things happening in the world that we can do all this. Like, it's just amazing. So like, amazing that, like I was saying, that we're here, that we're having this conversation, that there are so many wonderful people and wonderful things happening in the universe. We're not going to make this a negative section, because there are, despite everything, there are still so much wonderful things occurring. And one of those things is that you're in a space where, over the course of your career, no career really is a straight path or necessarily an easy path, but I love the fact that you've still had something that you are experiencing that brings you joy, that you're learning from all the time, and now you've been able to create this wonderful thing to share with so many people. And one of the things about that is that, you'll be learning stuff all the time. So my question for you is, what is your favorite science fact, if you have one? Look, I get asked what's my favorite Bowie song all the time. If I get impossible questions, so do you.
Yeah, well, ask me what my favorite Nirvana song is. Sure, I can answer that question because there's a finite number of those. Gosh, Favorite science fact or like thing or
Well,
just
just anything, even if it's just something new that you've like discovered or read about recently that's made you go, "Oh, that's neat."
I guess very vague in general. In general, the electromagnetic spectrum, but I play a lot with phosphorescence and glow in the dark stuff. It's fun for starters. It's a great deal of fun. I find it very engaging for kids to get them into things and explain stuff. Because one of the things I do is I take an interactive activity, whatever it might be, and use that as a doorway into the science. So what I love at the moment is light and color and all the varieties of the electromagnetic spectrum, visible and not, especially non-visible actually, or things like that appear under different wavelengths of light. I'm playing with different fountains of phosphorescent and fluorescent substances in the moment to make something fun and cool that I can use to explain how it all works. And just coincidentally, a colleague of mine is doing a project which will result in satellite going up to measure methane and other emissions over New Zealand and help to protect our future environment. And it's doing so by taking stuff that is invisible under normal conditions, and then basically using this amazing technology that's developed in New Zealand to speed it up out of the infrared wavelength into the visible wavelength so that we can actually study it and analyze it. And it was just a coincidence of me being cool, enjoying this phosphorescent stuff and her having to work on this project at the moment. And I'm hoping that I can share some of that fun stuff with kids and help them understand these big concepts, because that's the point. It's like, cool, it's fun, and yeah, I can explain why things glow and why this glows and this doesn't. But it's also the point that, yeah, this is also going to help us understand our environment and help protect us and keep you safe and, try to keep New Zealand the way it is. Yeah, it's hard for science in general. It would be hard to narrow down into a specific thing, because today will be this thing and tomorrow will be another thing, because I think you mentioned it, but it's a true thing for me, is that I go out every day and I'm constantly, not only am I amazed and surprised and in awe of things, what I'm amazed by is that I am still amazed by it. Like every day I'm still amazed. I'm looking at the same stars that I saw last night, but tonight is different because it's different. And I'm still amazed by it, even more so because I know something about it. And when I share that information with people, and like my parents, and my mother messages me excitedly and lists off all the stars that she can see, and she's like, "Am I right?" And it's like, yeah, she's excited about it. And so the more the more exciting it becomes, I think.
I love that. And it's so cool, like you said, that you're able to share this excitement and passion with people. So now, if you don't mind, I'm going to put that to the test because we have had some friends of the podcast send in some science questions for Colin. And what's
That
really
one's cool.
cool is that some of them may even be your target audience. So I have this amazing question from Sophie, who is six. Sophie wants to know if you put a clear balloon inside a coloured balloon with water in it and then put that over a candle, will it pop?
So I put a clear balloon, and then there's water between the two balloons,
Yes.
or yes.
That is how I've understood Sophie's question.
Yeah, no, I mean, no, it shouldn't. If it is, no, it shouldn't pop.
Why will it not pop?
Because the water is going to basically absorb that energy from the candle instead of just the rubber. So the rubber is able to maintain itself because that energy and that heat is being transferred into the water, instead of just staying in the rubber and overwhelming the rubber and popping the
Amazing.
rubber. So yes, you can fill a water balloon, you fill a balloon with water and hold it over a candle and it will not pop.
That's amazing. Ryan, who is nine, would like to know how can one jellyfish live forever? I don't know if you'll know this one, but This is what Ryan wants to know.
I guess you're talking about the immortal jellyfish.
I guess so, yeah.
I won't even attempt to claim to even understand how, but I do. My understanding is that it, at some stage, it reverses its aging process and goes back the way, and then basically respawns itself and starts again. Like I say, I'm not going to claim to know how to do that, but I would immediately call a couple of mates of mine and say, "Could you please tell me how this works?" And then I would pass it on to was it Ryan? Sorry,
Ryan, yes.
Ryan. That would be a cool. I want to know. And that's the thing is that if I don't know the answer to something, I want to know. So I
Yeah.
want to go find out now. So
Okay. And one
cool.
final question from Chris in his 40s.
Sorry,
Why
Lorraine's
is
also.
chicken soup so good when you're sick? Does chicken truly heal all wounds?
As a vegan, which way do you want me to answer this question?
It's Chris's question. It's not my question.
I think it wholly depends on who made the chicken soup
It's got to be mum's
and
chicken soup, right?
the intent that went into the soup.
Yeah.
As far as the nutrients, I don't know if chicken's any better than anything else. I would say it's love that heals in that case. You know, when a mum kisses a boo-boo and it's the
Yeah.
only way to make it stop hurting. So it's
Yeah.
got to be the only answer.
I would fully agree with that. And what a beautiful way to answer that question. Now, if other people want to ask you questions or want to see the amazing science things that you can do, how do they find you? How do they book you?
Have a look at smileyscience.nz. That's Smiley science, one word, smileyscience.nz. Or you can get in touch with me through that website. Some of our experiences are already listed, but we very grand. One day it'll be we. At the moment it's I. I will happily and would love to work with you rather than doing something for you. I'd rather work with you to do something. That's where the sweet spot is. If price is also an issue, let's work on that too, because there are things we can do in that realm as well in terms of birthday parties and stuff like that. So yeah, drop me a line, ask me random weird questions, or come out and I'll show you the stars. Let's do it.
Amazing. Oh, thank you so much, Colin from Smiley Science. Oh, I love saying that. That's really cool. This has been absolutely amazing. Thank you for sharing your science journey and answering some fun science questions.
Thank you very much, Mel. Bye.
The Rainbow Umbrella theme song is by Paul S. Allen and Beth. Check them out on Spotify. New episodes of The Rainbow Umbrella are available every fourth Thursday on Otago Access Radio 105.4 FM on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. Do you have an idea for an episode or something you would like to kōrero about? Get in touch at rainbowumbrellapod@gmail.com.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.